Welcome to the Kildren Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Dunbar. As always, stay tuned for the CPD code within the episode. This is the third and final part of our mini-series on rodent senses, and we're picking up again when I've been chatting to the Kildren Technical Manager for the Midlands, Avril Turner, all about rodent taste. Let's get into it. Right, okay, well then, last but not least, let's have a little chat about the sense of taste. We've kind of dipped into it a little bit when we talked about the smell, the perception of flavour. You know,
very closely linked.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. But we're going to sort of dig a little bit deeper into the sense of taste. So, again, us as humans, you know, we have a certain understanding of how a sense feels to us.
Yeah.
How does a sense of taste kind of compare or differ from what we know to be our sense of taste?
Okay. So when we think about the rodents, we need to imagine their mouth space. It's not like ours. They have that gap. They have the diastema, which is incredibly specialised for what they need to taste because they need to taste it incredibly quickly, have an immediate response, whether to swallow it or spit it out.
Yeah.
So we have this whole situation of, for example, building materials. Dare I say it, expanding foam. They're not going to want to consume expanding foam, which is why they'll just gnaw straight through it if they want to get to the other side.
Oh, yes.
And that taste, that perception of taste, they don't just have taste buds on their tongue.
Yep.
They have taste buds on the side of their cheeks. They have taste perception on their palate, their soft palate, their hard palate.
Wow.
So we just have them on our tongue.
Yep.
So that taste perception completely covers that entire mouth cavity.
Yeah.
So any tiny amount of food or building material or expanding foam or anything in that cavity allows them to make that incredible quick decision of whether to swallow it or not.
That's amazing, yeah, because I mean, that's, you know, they have to be very selective, that lack of ability to vomit.
Lack of gag reflex. Yeah. It's not coming back out again.
And yes, because they're quite a twitchy animal, I guess you can see why, you know, that decision has to be made.
Yeah.
Has to be made so quickly. Yep. That's brilliant. So out of all of those, you know, the sort of global coverage and taste buds of the mouths, are there any sort of taste preferences that they might have? Is there anything that, you know, they will go for more readily than other flavours?
Yeah. In your experience? we were looking at this and there is a reason why we have certain flavours in products.
Mm-hmm.
Certain, obviously, it is based on odour as well. I mean, that odour is the initial attraction and that scent. And then, obviously, the taste has to smell good, has to taste good.
Yep.
So A-grade materials taste better than non-A-grade materials. We also have quite a few masking agents within those products.
Right.
Even down to like the taste that they put in, maybe it tastes like burger, really nice.
Yeah.
Or it tastes like fresh wheat from the field. Tastes delicious.
The whimsical, yes.
So we would tend to have those natural preferences in rodents for the natural food they consume, but also some of the really good tasting foods that we have too.
Yes.
Chocolate.
Yes.
That's a great one, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Chocolate.
I think that's a universal one, isn't it?
He's got to be, hasn't
he? Oh, yes.
Yeah. A little bit of chunk of chocolate on those traps.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I guess that's the reason for all the big variety in formulations of rodenticides that we have.
Yeah, totally.
Those behaviours will be sort of formed as the younger growing up. You know, there's something that can be imprinted. There's something that they'll learn.
We also see that behaviour quite a lot.
Mm.
So the parents will find something that is preferable.
Yeah.
They will then imprint that onto the young. They will communicate saying this is safe, this is tasty, this is good to eat.
Yeah.
It tastes good.
Yes.
Eat this.
Yeah, I guess it's from evolutionary side, the sort of point of view as well, you know, it makes sense once you've tasted something and it's tried and tested, you know, you don't have that process of worrying about, you know, trying to test it again. And that neophobic response is sort of minimized from that.
Yeah.
So how does that behavior sort of influence how rodents sort of forage for food?
Okay. This would, again, based on the palatability.
Mm.
And also, we'd have to have in there textures as well. And often the natural food or the food that they've been consuming on site, we would match that with our preparations, wouldn't we? We'd try and match it as closely as we possibly could.
Definitely.
To what was there already.
Mm-hmm.
To avoid any near phobia. Obviously, we do have less near phobia to new food.
Yeah.
But we would still try to overcome that by matching it to what's there already via flavour as well as texture.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so we talked about how, you know, certain things will be more attractive. Are there any substances or smells or tastes that you want to avoid when formulating a base?
So, yes. I started to look at this a little bit, and we were looking at kind of the different taste spectrum and what mm-hmm. they can taste, what they can't taste.
Yeah.
And one of the things we were questioning was, can they taste spicy food? Do they taste it? I mean, we can taste spicy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in each individual, they will have a different preference for that.
That's it.
And
yeah.
There was some research that was carried out for this, and they actually found that the mice, they don't actually consume the spicy food. They don't tend to like it.
Yeah.
Until they get older. And the older individuals would then go for the spicy food.
Wow.
Maybe because their perception and taste is waning as they get older, as they age, and therefore wouldn't be able to have as much heightened sense of taste, therefore would eat more foods because it doesn't taste as spicy to them because they can't perceive it as well as, for example, a younger individual.
That's
but
right.
Within that, they also found in the research that they all have their own taste preference anyway.
Wow.
So you may see individual preferences between individuals within the same population.
That's fantastic. Yeah, well, there's so much of their sort of life translates to how we perceive the world and how we go up
yeah.
things. Wow, that's brilliant. So I'm going to ask you a question about bait shyness.
Okay.
So the bait shyness is something that we know, we understand, you know, it's one of the problems that we face when controlling rodents. As much of that, you know, as much as we understand of it, sort of a learned behavior in a way, or whether it's a true resistance that's sort of passed on genetically from generation to generation. Do you think that sort of taste has any influence on bait shyness or how that sort of develops?
Yes. So if we have, obviously with our normal baits, our normal anticoagulant baits, we have a delayed mm-hmm. reaction, and that delayed reaction is designed to overcome any new phobias towards that particular flavour or
right.
taste. So they wouldn't associate the taste of that product or that preparation with a feeling because of the delayed reaction. So that's essential that we do have a delayed reaction, because if they did associate it, then we would get a behavioural adversity because mm-hmm. they would realise that it was maybe not making them feel so well, they wouldn't consume as much, and they certainly wouldn't go back to it. There's also a really interesting research that taste aversions can last even longer than behavioural aversions. So
right.
we're talking sort of near phobia, initial near phobia, particularly in rats, 2 weeks-ish, mm-hmm. sometimes longer.
Yeah.
If they've had an aversion to the face or the paws or the body, we're looking at around 6 months. If it's a food aversion, the research showed that it was over a year before they overcame that aversion and started to try that food again.
Wow.
So this is why it's so important that that bait preparation or what's on the trap tastes good.
Yeah. I mean, food is such a powerful thing, isn't it?
It's absolutely.
An excellent motivator.
Yeah.
It's, we need it.
Yeah.
And sort of so many species out there, you know, have learned to enjoy it, and you get the most out of it in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
It's definitely translating to rodents.
Yeah. There is just another little thing. There was some trials as well,
mm-hmm.
looking at the concentrations of active ingredients in products as well.
Right.
And we look at a sort of a general concentration. It's similar between most products. We're looking at 0.005%, and it's sort of the lower concentrations in amateur products.
Yeah.
It actually showed the research that the rodents themselves can detect any other contaminants within that food as well.
Right.
So if we were to increase the concentration of the active ingredient, they may be able to taste it, and then we'd have a taste aversion to it.
Right.
So that's why the concentrations are kept low.
Yeah.
We know it's going to work at that concentration, but they can't taste it.
Yeah, it's still going to have that desired effect,
but sort of undetected. On the taste spectrum as well, again, that's why we can use Bitrex or denatonium benzoate, because they can't taste it. We can taste it, but they can't taste it.
That was one of the things I was going to ask you, actually, because there's a lot of people that sort of come up to us during training and say, can they not taste Bitrex or anything like that? So that's actually a thing.
So in theory, when we could compare sort of a human taste spectrum to a rat or a mouse, we have a greater taste spectrum than they do.
Okay.
But that's to our advantage.
Yes.
Because of that denatonium benzoate that they can't taste.
Fantastic. It's almost this golden solution for a safety feature in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Just a quick interruption to give you your CPD code for this episode. The code is perception-CPD-784. That's perception-CPD-784. Now back to the podcast. So are there any sort of future developments that you foresee to have a major effect on sort of pest control procedures and how we can utilize our understanding of the rodent sense of taste?
I think we essentially should, for the first things that we can do, aim to prevent any contamination of our bait, because that's something we can do at ground level. We can keep it separately. We can keep it in a separate area and prevent any contamination, particularly from the insecticides that might be stored in a similar area.
Yes.
Because if we did do that, then we could potentially contaminate the baits that we do use.
Yeah.
And that may cause an aversion, a taste aversion, and then they're never going to go near that bait ever again.
That's it, yes.
Well, in their lifetime anyway. I think it's important to think about it and important to carry on thinking about different research that has been going on. For example, the disulfide that I mentioned, that could in theory increase attractiveness, but not using taste, using another attractant. And I think that's really what we should be focusing on, is looking at other ways that we can attract rodents to where we want them to be so that we can control them better.
That's fantastic. That would certainly be a big solution for, you know, the so many problems we face in pest control industry.
Yeah.
You know, one of those, this sort of simplest one is getting them to eat the bait in the first place.
Or getting them to go on the trap.
That's it. Yes, exactly. So it goes down to, well, good old integrated pest management, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Manage the environment well enough, make them desperate enough to have a nibble on that. But if we can, at the same time,
make it even more attractive.
Exactly. Even amongst other sort of food sources that are present, because sometimes, you know, with the best intentions, we try to implement IPM, but sometimes it's impossible.
Sometimes it is impossible to remove that food source. Thinking like a grain store.
Yeah.
You're never going to remove all the grain in that store until it's time to empty it, maybe once a year.
100%, yeah.
And that's it. I mean, all the other time, it's a limitless food supply that's there.
Yeah.
If we could make the trap more attractive, if we could make that bait more palatable, and use our other methods to make it more effective.
Yeah.
That's the key.
That's it.
Job.
We've cracked it. We've cracked pest control.
That's it now.
No, but absolutely, you're right. You know, in scenarios like, you know, farms or landfill sites where there's just an abundance,
really challenging,
impossible
sites
to control this. That's fantastic. So I'm going to ask you sort of one last question before I let you go, Avril.
Okay.
What's your favourite of the five rodent senses? Which do you find most fascinating?
Okay. Hearing.
Right.
Because the hearing goes up to such a level, such a frequency, that rat, for example, if it was in its harbourage, could hear you come in before you even know you're going that place yourself.
Wow.
If you think about it in perspective, they would be able to hear that.
Mm.
And even if they couldn't hear the lower frequency noises that we are making, they would be able to feel the vibration of it.
That's right.
So they would sense that there was something there.
Yes.
Even if you weren't talking or making any other noises, just walking along.
Yeah.
They'd be able to hear you.
Absolutely. Because obviously the feeling, the their ability to sort of sense things with their touch as well. It all kind of merges into...
Yeah, it all works together.
That's right.
Heightened senses.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think hearing, because it's, yeah, they know, don't they?
They do.
And then it'd be up to us to overcome that.
That's it. That's the challenge, isn't it?
When they do carry out their normal behaviours, by the time they get to do their normal behaviours, we've hopefully set up everything we need to and actually solve the problem.
Wow. No, that's a brilliant answer. And honestly, Avril, thank you so much for coming on, for agreeing to jump on there.
Yeah, no problem.
The podcast. Obviously, for those that are listening, you know, we deal with rodents every single day, but now sort of hopefully... you know, I certainly learned new things. Hopefully some of you have as well. You know, kind of gives you a bit more appreciation and understanding of how those creatures have evolved to be such a successful pest species, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And
fantastic.
We, as always, we'll carry on reading those research papers and carry on hopefully bringing it to everybody else.
100%. And I believe there's some really interesting articles that you had a hand in pest control news, specifically about rodent senses. So if anyone wants to check him out, that's the place to go.
Yeah, there's loads of great information in there too.
Amazing. Right, Avril, I'll let you go. I know you're busy. So again, thank you so much and hopefully chat to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Cheers. This is it for this episode and for this mini-series on rodent senses. Very interesting topic, and it's really cool to dig a bit deeper into the intricacies of the rodent senses into a lot more detail than what we usually would. If you would like to catch up with Avril and chat about any of the topics discussed, you can catch her at one of the Killjump training courses or one of the industry events. But for now, from me, thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one.